Thanks for joining us on a Monday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am back with my co-host Josh Bass, and we are talking Jason Kidd's Hall of Fame career, comparing him to Steve Nash, and then talking about some shakeups in the Nets broadcasting booth heading into next season. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are listening to Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I am your host, Gavin Schall, coming off 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns. And I got to revisit those days. We did a crossover episode with Locked On Suns' Brendan Kleen earlier last week, who attends the Walter Cronkite School of Journalism just like I did. So that was really exciting, really cool to catch up with him. Highly encourage you to check that out if you haven't gotten an opportunity yet. But I get back my old, disgruntled, ankle-injured, traveling to Tucson, Arizona co-host Josh Bass this week. Josh, how's it going?
Gavin, you always know how to give me the best introduction.
I usually hype you up, so I wanted to bring you down a little bit today.
That's good. I needed an ego check.
So yeah. Admittedly, things are going they're just going too well for you. All right,
I'm swimmingly.
Yeah. All right, so I'm really excited for this episode because I think it was a long time in the making. Jason Kidd entered the Hall of Fame now. I think his official induction was like about a week and a half ago at this point, but for various reasons, we haven't had a lot of opportunity to talk about it yet because there was other stuff going on in Nets world, and then we did some crossover episodes last week. But finally, getting to it. And Josh, I can't imagine a better place to start. You're the lifelong Nets fan here. I think we told the story one time of your dad, Barry, and correct me if I'm forgetting the details on this, but I think he initially grew up a Knicks fan, and then were you the one who decided you wanted to root for the Nets when you were growing up?
So he was a fan of the hated Knicks.
Sure.
They had some tough moments, and really when Jason Kidd came to the Nets that 2001-02 season, they were just a captivating team. He became a Nets fan, and that was really the first time I remembered basketball, so I just happened to be a Nets fan because he was. So I can thank him for not being a Knicks fan. I don't know what I would do with myself because I hate the Knicks so much.
Yeah,
and you know that, like, right? I think all of our friends that are Knicks fans, they're just like, "Why do you have such an inferiority complex about the Knicks?"
Yeah,
I'm like, great question. I just don't know.
Yeah, I think you'd be a different person. I want to say like you'd be happier, but of course, like the Knicks were just terrible for most of your life as the Nets were. And like, at least the Nets, like the Knicks have like that 2013 season where like they were like, where it was like fun for like 20 games and then they were just okay. And then they lost in the second round. Like the Nets made the finals back to back years. And obviously like you weren't like, I'm sure you weren't quite as deep in as you are now, but I mean, you're telling me now those are the seasons that made you a Nets fan.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, that team was just so exciting. Ken Martin, Jefferson, Kerry Kittles, such a great time to be a Nets fan. And then it's pretty much been downhill ever since. But you know what? I was in an argument with my roommate the other day talking about who's been a better franchise, the Knicks or Nets, since 2000. My entire argument was based on the two back-to-back finals.
Yeah, no, I would.
That's really what we hang our hat on.
I would certainly say the Nets because, like, not only that, but then they were, like, competitive for a few years after. Like, the Knicks had 1 year where they were good. I mean, they made the playoffs, I think, in, like, 2003. But, as a Knicks fan, I would pretty clearly say the Nets. And then you want to even like the last like 2-3 years, I think, give the Nets a little bit of an edge just given the fact that they're in a much more stable position. And you can argue like the Knicks have some talent with possibly higher upside right now, but I would just trust the organizational stability of the Nets over the Knicks. Now, but let's not get too far down that road. That's another podcast that we do annually. Maybe we'll do another crossover with Locked On Knicks like we do every couple months or so, and get back into that topic. But for now, we are talking Jason Kidd. And you're right, it was that 2001-02 team. The year before, I think they won 26 games. The next season, they win 52. It was the only time in Nets history, both in New Jersey or Brooklyn, that the Nets broke 50 wins. And very famously before the season, I know there were a couple sites that had stories on this, and it was Fred Kerber of the New York Post who did a Nets oral history that was published, I think, in the past couple of weeks. I highly encourage everyone to check that out. And he was mentioning when Jason Kidd first got to the Nets, he gave Well, oh no, I'm sorry. I'm getting my quotes picked up. This was from a Michael Lewis book. He was, or article. He was saying Jason Kidd gave a speech right before the start of that first season saying, quote, "The losing is over. It will not be accepted any longer. Nothing that has happened before right now matters. Absolutely nothing. You work hard, you stick with me, you sacrifice, and you do what's best for this team, and we're going to win. Nothing else is acceptable." And like, I'm impressed with players who can make those speeches. I'm extraordinarily impressed with players that are capable of backing that up. And you can look at that one of two ways. Obviously, the Eastern Conference was extraordinarily weak at that time, but like, it's not like he had like another Hall of Famer to play with. Like, that team was Jason Kidd and the Jason Kiddettes. And there were solid role players around him, but Kidd elevated that team in a way that very few modern players do.
Oh, completely agree with you, Gavin. And like, we even saw when Kenyon Martin went to the Nuggets after that. I mean, a lot of it was due to injuries, but his career was never the same. When Richard Jefferson eventually got traded to Milwaukee, he tailed off a little bit. Kidd definitely knew how to make everyone around him better, and it's a cliche, but it's accurate. So yeah, he was a great leader. It's shocking to me that the Nets had never won more than 50 games in a season besides that one year, because that doesn't seem like a super high mark to me, but maybe it just shows the general ineptness of the franchise for the last 40 years.
Yeah, no, 100%. And then just the way Kidd went about it, like, he's such an anachronism in a way, because he didn't shoot the ball very well for his career. And we're going to get into that, comparing him to Nash, who was obviously the total opposite, but he was his point guard who just couldn't shoot. And like, right now you look at a guy like that and you're like, okay, what's like, all right, we're talking about, what are we talking about here? Elfrid Payton. But he was still, and obviously it was a little bit easier to survive that way back then because shooting across the board wasn't quite as efficient, but he would still dominate games like that. And I just can't really think of another guy who's like in this point guard, who I think is third all time in triple doubles. Obviously Russell Westbrook, I guess, would be kind of the closest thing you have to a modern comparison, but Kidd also didn't have that elite athleticism. Like now it's like one or the other. Like,
well,
if you can't,
he was an amazing athlete in his prime.
Sure. But he wasn't Westbrook, like in terms of like, yeah, attacking the basket and like dunking over guys.
Yeah. The pace is a lot faster. That's a lot allowing for more possessions, more rebounds, and more assists for Westbrook.
Yeah, 100%.
And we don't want to get into the whole argument with him because everyone has their own kind of philosophy on whether he's a stat chaser or whether he is just a superhuman player. I don't want to get into that now.
Yeah, no, I was making the point that like the fact that like Kidd without those two was so effective, like, It's funny because like the guys like we talk about as great NBA players today, they did do a lot of the same things the same ways. They all shoot well. They're all really smart with the basketball. They're great at breaking down defenders. They're great at recognizing help. They're intelligent across the board. And Kidd was just even at that time was just different than a lot of other superstars. And I'm wondering, again, everyone talks about the culture of AAU basketball, and there are less kind of I guess weird kinks in people's games, like everyone kind of looks the same way. I wonder if we'll ever get someone like Jason Kidd, because he just seems so unique, even relative to the era he played in.
I feel like Lonzo is the closest thing now we have to a Jason Kidd archetype. I mean, he's nowhere close to that player, and he most likely never will be. But in terms of just being amazing, struggles to score, good rebounder, good positional defender, he does seem to have that kind of mentality of really all he cares about is making his teammates better and setting up guys. And we even saw in college, TJ Leaf, Ike Anibogu, who else do they have?
Bryce Alford, Aaron Holiday.
Alford,
great team.
And all these guys, yeah, who were like, okay, he just made them look so good.
Yeah. No, for sure. No, he is that guy. And like, I don't want to get too far down that rabbit hole either, but I'm very bullish on him. All right. Just to wrap this up, Josh, do you have like a favorite, like, specific moment or memory of Jason Kidd? Like, it might even be like after those finals teams, like it might have been when he was playing with Vince Carter.
Yeah, no, I definitely do. I mean, he had so many great moments as a Net. A lot to pick from, but my favorite would have to be, I believe this was against the Knicks. Maybe, I don't think it was when they made finals, but it was his bowling ball pass to Lucius Harris all the way down the court. I mean, there was no other way to get the ball to him, and he just rolled it 60-plus feet, perfect pass, and Lucius Harris laid it in. Just like a perfect encapsulation of the creativity. Not always the most conventional way of getting it there, but he was always effective, and no one else would have thought to make that pass. So that's definitely probably my favorite career highlight of Jason Kidd.
Yeah. To me, it was just like the connection him and Vince Carter had right off the back. Like it was kind of basketball destiny that those two got an opportunity to play with each other while Carter was still relatively in his prime. Like they just had so many good moments in transition together. And I guess, you know, I said that would be the last question, but I did want to touch on this. Like, obviously, like by the time they came together, you could make a case that both of them were kind of at the tail end of like their like ultimate peaks. Like obviously, like Jason Kidd went on to win a championship with Dallas and was still had like some all-star caliber seasons, and Carter is somehow still playing. But it felt like they never like fully reached their potential. Like, because I remember when those two came together, like the talk was like, all right, the Nets could get back to the finals theoretically.
Yeah, I think like I wouldn't say they underperformed because they did have some couple good seasons. That 05-06 year, they made it to the Eastern Conference semis, 49-33, I believe. They lost to LeBron's Cavs in the second round. But, I mean, here's the thing. Vince Carter came, and he was absolutely incredible that first season with the Nets. Averaged 27.5 points per game, really efficient shooting. He was just a completely dominant player. I mean, he was – the way he kind of got out of Toronto wasn't necessarily it's not going to be a shining mark on his legacy. But he came to the Nets, had a 24.5 PER in the last 60 games of the year, and he was an all-star caliber player. And Jason Kidd was still at his peak. The thing was, they didn't have a ton of other guys around them to do anything. I mean, Kenyon Martin was pretty banged up at that time, wasn't the same player he was in those finals runs. So they really lacked a lot of front court depth, relying on guys like Jason Collins, who really isn't, I mean, a nice guy, just wasn't going to be anything dynamic or special. So they didn't have the depth. Those two together made it for an exciting combo. So I don't think they really had any potential that wasn't maximized.
All right, great way to wrap this up on Jason Kidd. When we come back, we are talking Jason Kidd versus Steve Nash, a battle of my favorite childhood point guard against Josh's. That next on Locked On Nets.
It's that time again. Fantasy football is officially underway, and we have not one but two fantasy football shows to help you. Locked On Fantasy Football 24/7 gives you all the latest news, waiver suggestions, and injury news. Locked On Fantasy Football is now Locked On Fantasy Football Experts with amazing guests every day. Monday, Tom Kucinich. Tuesdays, Eric Edholm. Wednesdays, Jeff Ratliff and Tyler Leuchner. Peak ticket season in New York is fast approaching. Peak ticket season in New York is fast approaching, and we know that you want to be a part of it. The NFL is in full swing, the Yankees are getting ready for a playoff run, and hockey and basketball are just around the corner. And there's no better option to get a great deal on attending any of those events than Vivid Seats. Vivid Seats allows you to sort by price or look for seats in the section and row of your choice. To make things even better, Vivid Seats is giving listeners an exclusive promo code for $20 off orders of $200 or more to save you even more money. Go to the App Store or Google Play and download the Vivid Seats app. Then use promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. Every purchase is backed by a 100% buyer guarantee. From the biggest concerts and games to the hottest theater and more, Vivid Seats has it all. Download the app and enter promo code LOCKEDON for $20 off orders of $200 or more. That's LOCKEDON. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats help you get to your favorite live event.
We are back on the Locked On Nets podcast. Gavin Shaw, Josh Bass, talking Steve Nash against Jason Kidd. Obviously, both went into the Hall of Fame together. Both started their careers on the Phoenix Suns on the same team. They played together at points, and like I went back and tried to find some of that footage on YouTube. There's not a whole lot of it, but like just the limited stuff you can find is pretty good. Obviously, Kevin Johnson, who I can't remember if he's a Hall of Famer or not, but he's borderline. He was certainly good enough to be in that conversation. So that was just kind of like a weird basketball irregularity, like that those two somehow ended up on the same team. I know Nash talked really glowingly about Kidd in his Hall of Fame speech, or maybe just talking to reporters. He said Jason Kidd was only a year older than me, but I looked up to him the whole way, and he made mention, I think in like a separate article, about how like Kidd constantly made him better, and just going up against Kidd in practice every day was like a big part of the reason like he thought he was able to thrive once he eventually ended up on Dallas after his rookie season in Phoenix, and then obviously before going back. So this debate is a fascinating one, because it really, I think it really depends on what you value more in a player. Steve Nash, quite a bit more efficient, averaged 1.5 more game similar assist numbers, half as many rebounds, but did so on 49% shooting, 43% from the three-point line. Jason Kidd at 40%, 35% from the three-point line for his career. So, Josh, I'll give you the first crack at it. Do you have a strong opinion on this one way or another?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't really go wrong with any of these two players. I think at the time, I'd say Jason Kidd, who was able to kind of just carry a team more, just because he affected every aspect of the game. Phenomenal defender, really great rebounder, incredible passer. And again, since the floor wasn't spaced as well, just scoring was lower. So having a guy like him, who was an inconsistent shooter, wasn't as much of a liability. Looking at today's game, who would I rather have? It's probably someone like Steve Nash, who's just like an absolute maestro and can really orchestrate your offense very crisply. And really having him at the helm is going to make you a dynamic team. So I think at the time, I'd probably go with Kidd, though, just because he really was such a special player, and his team winning more. I mean, the Suns went up against some juggernauts in the Spurs and the Lakers at the time. Actually, no, the Lakers weren't.
Yeah, no, the Lakers knocked them out of the playoffs twice for Steve Nash.
Yeah, I guess that was like more like 2010 or so. Okay, yeah, so Spurs and then Lakers. And Kidd didn't have that competition, but I don't know. Kidd just has a special place in my heart, and you can tell me I'm biased, and that's completely fine.
No, well, I think it cancels out, because I'm biased the other way, because I grew up loving Nash, and, like, Kidd was always a guy, like, I respected, I acknowledged was great, but just aesthetically, like, I'm someone who, like, I really enjoy good shooting, and that obviously wasn't Kidd's game. I think something that stood out to me was just the difference in their playoff numbers. Both of them elevated their games in the playoffs, but Kidd was just so inefficient, like, and just in general, and that didn't change at all in the postseason. His three-point shooting dropped down. He still shot 40% from the field. Three-point shooting dropped from 35% to 30. Nash wasn't as good from three either, 43 down to 38, but shot 50% from the field in playoff games. Just scoring the basketball, Nash was at 19 points, 10 assists, 3.5 rebounds. Kidd, who was a better passer in the regular season, at 14 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds. And I guess, like, the flip side of it is, like, again, like, Nash had more talented players to get the ball to. Obviously, you're going to get more assists passing it to Amari Stoudemire and Sean Marion versus Kerry Kittles, Richard Jefferson, Kenyon Martin. But Nash was also, as we pointed out, consistently going against tougher competition. So I consider that something of a wash. And I just, like, and when you go back and, like, look back at his career, and, like, I'm such a big fan of those Suns teams that I've done it quite a few times. Highly recommend Jack McCollum's book on, I believe, the 2007 Suns. There were just all these playoff games that you kind of forget about, just because, again, like, Nash's Suns teams never reached the pinnacle. They never even got out of the Western Conference. But he had all these playoff games where he had 38 points, 47 points, 35 points. And this is a guy who was a reluctant scorer. Like, you saw those articles recently with Mike D'Antoni saying his biggest regret was that he didn't have Steve Nash shoot 8 three-pointers a game. And that was just something Nash really didn't want to do. But when push came to shove, he was an absolute killer scoring the basketball, passing the basketball, and he's really just an unstoppable offensive weapon in a way that I think Kidd, and obviously Kidd had his moments, like, I think he had like a 30-point game in the finals against the Lakers, and he showed flashes of that, but he was just not, like, I don't think he had the ceiling as a scorer or as an overall offensive player that Nash did. And I get defensively, like, the comparison isn't even close. Like, Nash was generally poor. Kidd, I think, finished his career making 9 all-defensive teams, if Basketball Reference is back. But, like, to me, like, with the style of basketball I value, like, I'll take that offensive ceiling over that two-way balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's a good point. But also, I feel like, yeah, I mean, Nash was a pretty big liability on defense, and Kidd, obviously, an all-world defender, especially in his prime. And also, he rebounded like a power forward. So it really, especially in playoffs, is bouncing around who's going to grab it. Kidd would always make that play. So getting a Nets team like he did that wasn't anything special basically helped them double their win total his first year there. I don't know. I'm partial to Kidd. I think you can't go wrong with any of them because Nash is a phenomenal player and really transformed the position. But I think if I was playing one playoff game, I'd want Kidd. One regular season game, I'd want Nash.
Oh, really? I would almost say like the opposite. Like, I think like...
No,
like,
I value kind of that, just like that intangible and that toughness in a playoff game because scoring, they're going to clamp down on scoring regardless.
Sure, but I mean, the point is, like, Nash was, like, I mean, you can look at the stats, like, he was just a much, much better scorer in the playoffs than Kidd was.
Yeah, no, he was a much better scorer, but I think that if Kidd was playing with prime Amari Stoudemire and Sean Marion, maybe he would be not as dynamic a scorer as Nash was, probably not as efficient, but also he could have gotten there, I think.
Sure, but you...
Especially in his prime when he was as athletic getting to the basket as he was. I mean, he always struggled to finish, but I think he's a more complete player. there.
Yeah, and I guess you could look at it both ways. You could say if Nash didn't have his strong teammates, like, I think the fact that, like, again, like, Kidd obviously, like, absolutely got, like, not individually, but, like, his teams got, like, destroyed when they ran into the Spurs and Lakers teams in consecutive finals, and Nash was able
The Spurs series did go six games. I know.
Yeah.
And Tim Duncan had to have a quadruple-double in game six to beat the Nets.
Okay, all right. So
I think that one was a little bit closer than people think.
All right, okay. So I'll apologize for that one. But I'll just say, in general, I think to your point of, like, defenses tightening up in the playoffs, like, I think Nash as an individual, like, offensively, was able to overcome that. And, like, but again, we're talking about the modern NBA. And the flip side of the modern NBA with Nash being a better fit offensively is, like, especially, like, in postseason play, like, we saw what LeBron did last season, like, constantly, like, targeting the weakest defender on switches. Like, Nash would be, like, more aggressively sought out on defense, I think, now with, like, coaching getting better and more specific and teams being more willing to just, like, run pick and rolls until, like, you get the switch. And, like, that Houston Rockets style of offense, I think, really could have exposed Nash in a way that maybe he wasn't to quite the same degree when he played it, and Kidd would obviously be able to hold up. So, again, there's a million different ways to look at it.
Yep, no wrong answer here.
Okay, all right, so we settled on that. You like Kidd, I like Nash. Nobody's going to change our minds on that. I'd love some social media engagement on that one. Maybe I always talk about putting up polls. I never do, but maybe tomorrow will be the day where I go ahead and do that, and we can see what Locked On Nets listeners think. What did you say?
I think we put one poll in our history where it was, will James Webb the III ever make a three-pointer?
Oh, yeah. Do you remember how that went?
90% of people were proven wrong that he did make one.
Idiots. All right. With that, we'll wrap up our second segment, and we'll finish with a third short and sweet one. I like this way of ending the show. And you added on a light note, talking about some potential shifts in the Nets broadcast booth, heading into next season. But first, a quick reminder, the Locked On Podcast Network is expanding with college shows. Coming this week, Locked On Wolverines, Locked On Buckeyes, and Locked On Seminoles. Plus, we are already locked on to the Ducks, Nittany Lions, Bears, the Crimson Tide, the Wildcats, Razorbacks, Volunteers, and Sooners. Find your favorite college show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Third and final segment, we spent two talking about Jason Kidd, and now some off-the-court news. This is something we like to talk about a lot in the regular season. We haven't had a lot of talk about in the off-season. This was not really anything to talk about, but I love the media side of things, and we're going to get into that a little bit now. So the czar, Mike Fratello, the voice of my beloved NBA Live 2005 game, he will not be back in the studio next year. Fratello, 71, this is from Andrew Marchand, and his article on this has been one of the biggest NBA analysts dating back to his work as the czar of the telestrators on the NBA Finals with Marv Albert. Josh, any kind of feeling on that? Obviously, like, this guy, again, like, I think he was with the Nets, like, as long as, or pretty close to as long as Ian Eagle has been. It's one of the voices of your childhood. Any strong feelings on that?
Yeah, I'm really sad about obviously I think people saw this coming because after last year when they moved him from the into the studio, it definitely was a shift in giving people like Sarah Kustak more games, and she's phenomenal also. But yeah, I'm definitely gonna miss Fratello. I mean, the guy's 71, so it's probably time for him to phase out, and he wants to spend more time with his family. But I'm always going to miss him kind of doing his drawings on the telestrator and having Ian Eagle do the ridiculous guesses and just the bit and the chemistry going on between them. And also, he was instrumental in the Who Am I? So
yeah,
it's going to be weird not having him there. But I think the Nets have such a good broadcasting team that they're not going to miss a beat. But he obviously did add that flavor that we will all miss.
Yeah, no, he was I obviously missed his peak on the Nets, but I did enjoy it like that. Like, after, like, I would always, like, speed through halftime, and then I would pause it and make sure I caught him drawing every single time. Is that brightened my day as a Nets podcaster. The flip side of this is Jim Spanarkle, I think, is going to be taking some of those studio reps away that were Mike Fratello's the previous year, which means he will be doing color analysis a little bit less. And I'm not quite sure what that means, because there are also rumors that the Nets are going out trying to get Richard Jefferson, and anyone who listens to the Road Tripping podcast or has just followed Jefferson's career, as a lot of you probably have, as longtime Nets fans, I'd know that he would be, I think, really, really excellent in that role. He's an outstanding communicator and a genuinely funny guy, not afraid to poke fun at someone he's doing media work with. So I think him and Ian or him and Ryan would potentially be really good together, though Jefferson is apparently trying to play next season and is also being courted by the Clippers, so who knows how that goes. But I thought all that was kind of interesting.
Yep, Clippers need a Bruce Bowen replacement at this point.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I'd love to have RJ. I mean, I love Spinarco also, so knowing that he's going to be going to the booth and not doing as many, or if any, games at this point is also bittersweet. But yeah, I don't know. I think that, yeah, if they get RJ, he's going to be a great replacement. Sarah, if she's doing full-time color, that's also going to be awesome because she had an amazing first year, super knowledgeable about the game, great chemistry with all of the other talent, Ian, Ryan, Michael Grady, I thought did a good job in his first year. So regardless who the Nets have in booth and the studio, it's going to be a good product, but it's definitely going to be a little bit different and getting used to some new voices.
All right, and with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast as my dog starts barking loudly. I set an alarm on him. He is singling that our time is up today. We will likely be back later this week with more Locked On Nets. Again, if you didn't get a chance, check out our crossover with Locked On Suns last Friday, I believe I put that out. And additionally, I'll check out Locked On College. I think we added podcasts for Locked On Michigan, which I imagine a lot of New Yorkers will like. I know we got a Florida State one if you want to hear about how bad their football team is. There's Locked On Oklahoma, which I have been keeping track of closely and is very, very entertaining. It's very likely if you root for a college football powerhouse, we have a podcast for you, and there are more on the way, so stay tuned for that.